All right. After that little musical interlude, I'm back with Nick and Pat Szabo. How are you guys doing today?
Fine. Hi, Pam.
Good afternoon, Pam. We're doing just great in this wonderful, sunny,
it is a
Kodiak
gorgeous day out
isn't
there.
It?
I kind of can't wait to be done until I can go outside and enjoy some of that nice weather today.
Yeah. I hear it's supposed to be nice tomorrow, too.
Yes, yes. And then wet on Sunday
from
what we're seeing so far.
Well, you never know, you know.
Yeah, you don't.
I never put much stock in the forecast beyond about 24 hours. You
yeah,
know,
so. Yeah. So hopefully it'll stay nice tomorrow and we'll have a good weekend ahead, right? That'll
Let's
be
hope
good.
So. Yeah.
That'll be good. So you guys are here to tell us a little bit about how and why you got to Alaska, and then maybe how you met, because you didn't meet here, but we'll get into that. And Nick, you were saying that you were the first one who came up to Alaska?
Yeah, that's correct. I was working back in New York in 1965, and I was working, actually, it was sort of an interesting side note here. I was working at a place in the, up in the Hudson River Valley, north of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Briarcliff Manor, which is now owned by Donald Trump. So it wasn't back then.
Wasn't owned by the Trump family back then?
It's a golf club, golf. And,
oh, okay. What you were know, you doing there?
Well, I worked in the kitchen. I worked as a cook and, you know, so forth back in the kitchen.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Can you hear that when you're moving your feet around?
Oh,
we're
yeah.
Picking
sorry,
that
sorry,
up.
Sorry
okay.
about that. Okay. Anyway, so it was a summer job. The season ended Labor Day.
Okay.
So one of the other chefs at the kitchen had been to Alaska before, and he was wanting to go back again, and he was looking for someone to help him drive and share expenses.
Because you were going to have to drive all the way across the country from there, right?
From where?
Well, did you come from direct from New York?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so I was, since the job ended Labor Day, and I didn't really have too much lined up after that, I thought, well, what the heck, I'll come up for about a month and see what it's like, you know. So anyway, so he had a, I don't know if you remember the Chevy Corvairs. They were a compact rear engine compact car.
They were unique.
Yeah. And we drove from New York, well, actually, Weehawken, New Jersey, which is right across the Hudson River from New York. We drove from Weehawken, New Jersey to Anchorage in 4 days.
Wow.
It was sort of like wheel watch on a boat, you know. One guy would drive until it was time to get gas. And then while one guy was filling up the gas tank, the other guy would go into the cafe and get a couple of cheeseburgers. And then we'd switch positions, and then we were both over 6 feet at the time, and so the other guy would sack out on that little short back seat. And but when you're 22, you can do anything.
Well, yeah, you can fold up into a tiny little ball if you have to. So, first of all, a Corvair, as I recall, those were not real far off the ground. That must have been a heck of a trip coming up the Alcan with that car.
Well, yeah, it was. Well, not so much the fact that it was low, but it was a long trip, and that was before the Alcan was paved at all.
Right.
It was just a two-lane gravel road, much like some of the roads around here that haven't been paved yet.
Yeah.
And you would get behind a semi-truck on these windy mountain roads, and you get stuck there, and they would be throwing up dust and gravel, and it wasn't a pleasant trip as far as going up there.
No, but to do it in 4 days, oy.
Yeah.
That's
well, we
crazy.
Did stop once. I think in Whitehorse, we finally couldn't stand each other, so there was a place where we could take a shower. And we did actually sit down and have a hot meal in the cafe and that type of thing. But it was one of these roadhouses, I think, just outside of Whitehorse.
Yeah.
And for, I think, $1.50, you could take a shower and so forth. So.
Pretty good deal. So that was in 65?
Yeah.
In the summer? In the fall you came up.
September, the middle of September, because Labor Day is the first Monday, I think, in September. So it was, you know, around the 15th or so by the time we got up.
So what was the plan once you got here? What were you going to do?
Well, he went on to get a job in one of the hotels as a chef.
Mm.
And then I picked up a couple of jobs cooking, and then I did a few other things. I drove truck for a while. And then I wound up working for the Anchorage Times, which was the major newspaper in the state at the time. They've since gone out of business, but they, at the time, the Anchorage Daily News was just a little bitty paper, and the Anchorage Times was the dominant paper, and that was when Bob Atwood was the owner and publisher and everything, and he was a big political power in the state and help, you know, get the state, the Statehood Act passed and all that stuff.
All that stuff.
So anyway, so I was working there at the Anchorage Times, and getting towards spring, you know, for that winter, and getting towards spring, somebody at the paper said, oh, did you know they've got a charter flight going down to Kodiak for the Crab Festival? And at that time, the Crab Festival was the first weekend in May, because the king crab season started the 1st of July and went until the end of April. And so the crab season was scheduled for the end of, I mean, the Crab Festival was scheduled for the end of the crab season.
End of the season, yeah.
So anyway, so they had, it was a DC-3 charter, and we hopped on this, the DC-3, and flew down here and spent the weekend at the Crab Festival. And so I was sort of interested in doing something different for the summer anyway, because the newspaper thing was mainly just a winter job. And I'd heard about king crab fishing and all that, and so I looked around and didn't find a job while I was here, but it looked like the prospects might be good. So I returned on the charter, gave my notice at the paper, and then at the time, the Tustamina used to start up in Anchorage.
Several people have said that. I didn't realize that.
And they would stop in Homer and then come here. Huh. So I packed up my bags and hopped on the ferry, the old Tusty, down at, up in Anchorage. And
how long of a trip was that if it went Anchorage to Homer and then across? That must have probably taken forever.
Probably close to 24 hours total, you know, with the stopping in Homer and loading. And then they went to Seldovia and stopped and loaded. And I don't remember, but I would suspect it would probably be close to 24 hours.
So anyway, you hopped on the ferry, got all your stuff, and you ended up here in Kodiak again.
Yeah, and that was the spring of 66.
Okay.
Probably June or so of 66. And, of course, the town was still rebuilding from the 1964 earthquake.
I was
going to
say, it must have still been pretty rough and tumble.
Yeah, most of it, there was still part of the old town, and then there was part of the new town. Mm-hmm. The only new buildings, I think, that were here were the old craft store, you know, where AC used to be. That had just gotten finished. I think the movie theater was up.
Where it's at now, the current location. Okay.
And then where Henry's is used to be called Solly's.
Yes.
Solly's Bar was there. But then...
A staple for a long time.
But then all the others were these temporary plywood buildings. You know, Tony's and the Mecca and, you know, the ships and all of those were just temporary plywood buildings. And things were still a mess because, as many people know, that the island sunk about 6 feet during the earthquake. And at the highest high tide, the water was starting to come over the bank. So they basically leveled the whole town and hauled in 4 feet of fill and raised the whole town site up 4 feet before they rebuilt. So, you know, there was a lot of moving around. Some of the houses, you know, that were downtown, like Sutliff's and Ardinger's, got moved out, you know, down the road and so forth. So they pretty much evacuated the whole town and then rebuilt from scratch.
Heck of a time. Heck of a time. So you get here in 66. You are looking for work, obviously, and you were hoping to get on the crab fleet. Was that the idea?
Yeah, well, I did get on a boat. It was called the Venus. It was a 60-foot wooden boat. And we started out fishing halibut. And you're not going to believe this, we got 25 cents a pound for halibut, you know, versus about $5 or $6 now. And then at the time, that, and like I said before, the king crab season started the 1st of July. So we fished a couple of weeks in June, halibut, and then switched over to king crab. And he had a regular crew, but they weren't coming until September or so. So I got to fish July and August king crab fishing, you know, on the, on, and so I sort of got my start there.
You know. Where were you fishing? Which waters? Right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that year they put in 90 million pounds of king crab.
Holy cow.
Just here in Kodiak. You know.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, what'd you do then when his regular crew got here?
Well, I got off and I looked for other things. I went to work for Jim Major at East Point, unloading shrimp boats and so forth. And then, shortly after that, another guy and I wanted to go trapping. So we went up to the north end of Afognak, up to Paranosa Bay, and spent the winter trapping up on the north end of Afognak.
Are there marten up there, fox?
Oh, there was fox, there was beaver, Okay. There was Martin.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
That's pretty country up there, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful country. So when you must have stayed here for a while doing all your fishing stuff, and then what happened next?
Oh, well, so I stayed here, fished in Bristol Bay and halibut and salmon and crab and all that. And then in the summer of 68, I grew up in Florida. In Jacksonville, Florida. And so the summer of 68, my sister was getting married.
Mm.
And I hadn't been home since I had first left in 65. And so the end of the salmon season, I came back for the wedding down in Jacksonville. And then after the wedding, I thought, well, you know, I'm down here. Well, maybe I'd look around and see if I could find something down here for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, the newspaper, the National Fisherman,
mm-hmm.
was a much bigger publication than it is now. You know, it was a big, almost a full newspaper. And they had every month, they had an ad for this Windjammer cruise. They were looking for people for Windjammer cruising down in the West Indies. You know, the big, tall sailing ships and stuff. And so I thought, well, you know, I've got a little experience on boats now after 3 years or so. Maybe I'll give those guys a try. So I called them up. They are down in Miami. And the guy said, well, come on down. We're just outfitting another ship, and, you know, we can probably put you to work. So I rode the train down to Miami and got on board, and they were refitting a boat that... it was about 200 feet long, you know, a three-masted schooner. And so I got on that, and I worked, and we sailed down to Antigua.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was our base down there, St. John's Antigua. And so then we started doing our cruising, and we'd do a 10-day cruise every 2 weeks, and one north to the Windward Islands, another south to the Leeward Islands. Or no, I think it's the other way. The north was leeward and south was
windward.
Windward. Anyway. Yeah.
So you were down there cruising, and then somewhere in here, you ended up down there too, right, Pat?
My dad saw an ad for Windjammer Cruises, and he said, oh, this looks like fun. And at the time, I was working for the government in Washington, D.C., and I said, yeah, it was something I could afford. So I think it was February of 1969.
Mm-hmm.
I went on a fateful Windjammer cruise.
A fateful cruise.
Yes, and met one of the crew members who I thought was awfully cute.
So you guys actually met on the boat?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. The other corner kind of the world.
Yeah,
from here.
I would say so, yeah. A kitty corner. Pew, down at an angle. So what happened after you met?
Well,
did you stay on the cruise, Pat, or did you go back home?
I finished my week or 10 days, whatever it was. It was wonderful. I've seen pictures since of we were on the Windward Mm-hmm. West Indies. I've seen pictures since, and it looks very touristy and developed.
Mm.
But at the time, it wasn't developed at all. It was beautiful. Hopefully, some of the development that's happened has brought money into the
into
area, because
yeah.
it was very poor.
I bet it was.
There, but it was beautiful. So after that, I went back to Kodiak,
Washington.
And I didn't think I'd ever see you again. How did we?
Oh,
you came to visit me, didn't you, in Washington?
Well, after I got, let's see. After I got done with the cruise, I came back, and my brother was living in Atlanta at the time, and so I spent some time with him, and then Pat was back in Washington, D.C., and so I called her up and said, oh, you know, how about if I drive up to Washington, D.C.? And she said, okay. And so we just pretty much spent the weekend together, but that was about it. And then I left, and then...
And where were you headed from then? Were you headed back up?
I went back to Kodiak.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And So I sort of was hinting that, well, maybe Pat might like to come up to Kodiak, you know. And but she'd been used to living in St. Louis and Washington, D.C. and all those big city places. And she didn't exactly think that was a great idea. So anyway, I went back to Kodiak, and then Pat quit her job. And then she started traveling, and she was in Cape Cod, and she was in San Francisco and Albuquerque. Meanwhile, I was fishing and doing all, and this was over a span of 2 or 3 years, you know.
Oh, really?
So anyway.
Get the first part accurate, I was going to come up here, but he said, well, he was going to be fishing salmon for the summer, and, you know, he wasn't going to be around, so I thought, okay. So I went to Cape Cod and worked as a waitress. And that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought myself a car that I think had 120,000 miles on it at
the
time. And just kind of went from place to place, all the places that he mentioned. And it just took some time till I got to Denver.
Okay. Yeah, via San Francisco and Albuquerque and so forth. So do you have... Do you have Denver queued up?
Yeah, I can pull up Denver here.
Well, let me just say a couple more words, and then you can. So anyway, so I was fishing for the next 2 or 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and so at the end of I think I was fishing shrimp. At the end of the shrimp season, Western Airlines was around back then,
uh-huh.
and they had what was called a triangle fare, and they would, for the same price, you could go to Hawaii and another city on their western route and back to Kodiak for the same price.
As if you had just gone to Hawaii and back.
They call that the triangle.
All right.
And Denver was one of the spots on the triangle. And Pat just happened to be in Denver at the time. So now if you want to play the song.
Okay, now we'll play the song.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the troubadour takes great pride in presenting Randy Sparks and his new Christy Minstrels.
Woman in Denver.
It wasn't quite like that, but you got the idea.
Some similarities, yes. Huh?
Well, he came to visit, and he was still awfully cute. And the other song that I told you about is mm-hmm. from the Fantastics. Try to remember.
Right.
Well, we went to see it, and at one point he laughed, and it was this beautiful, deep chuckle. It was love.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. It was the laugh
that
did it.
Yeah.
That's so kind of cool.
Shortly after, I came up to Kodiak.
So, okay. So you'd been traveling around all over the place. And
right.
you had your father obviously kind of aided you and abetted in adventuring in the sense that he sent you off on the cruise in the first place, right?
Well, yes. My parents were a little amazed, at least my mom was, because I had a good job in Washington. Mm. And they came, and this was before I started traveling around. This was when I thought I was going to come up here. So I said, I have all this furniture. I've rented a U-Haul. Can you take it back to Indiana, where they lived at the time? And my mom, I think, gasped. And my dad said, huh, I've never driven a U-Haul before, but I think I can do it. So that was that.
That was that. Yeah. They took all your stuff back to Indiana, and uh-huh. you started all your trekking around while he was out fishing shrimp.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so you got back together in Denver. You loved the laugh, and that was it. So did you come back to Kodiak then from Denver?
Yeah, I did. And I don't know what I expected of Kodiak. As Nick said, I'd never lived any place small.
Yeah, you were
in
cities all the way
along.
You know,
it was 5,000 or 6,000 people. So the first day, Nick was, as usual, out fishing. So his skipper's wife picked me up, and she had to stop at Kraft's to pick up some groceries. So I was looking around, and I was really impressed, because there in the produce department was something like a kumquat or a mango or something. I thought, wow, this place is up there. Well, I went back the next day to buy the groceries I needed. Kumquat was still there, mm-hmm. but there wasn't any milk, there weren't any eggs, there wasn't any bread. The ship hadn't come in. So it was something to adapt to. But on the other hand, Nick had said maybe I could get a job at the store that his good friend Ben Artinger had. Mm. So I was expecting something, you know, the Old West movies where there's the
mercantile.
Old store. The mercantile.
Yes.
That's exactly what I was expecting. Kind of dusty and not all that nice. And I walked into this beautiful store with all the wonderful things they had to sell. I loved working there. It was
fun. Bet you did.
Yep.
I bet you did. Did you work there a long time?
I worked there for a while and then went out to work on the base and then came back. But Ben was kind of a helper, would you say? Kodiak was a male-heavy population at the time. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of us females who came up from down below. And we worked for Ben for a particular period of time until we found other jobs. And we've stayed here and married the person that we came up to be with.
So I'm trying to pinpoint the era. Was this wasn't 68?
I came up in 71.
71. So you actually did travel around for a few years before you reconnected. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. 71.
Yep. November of 71, I think she came up. It was in the winter, and that was when shrimp was going all winter. So I was fishing all that winter. But the nice thing about shrimp fishing, or I thought anyway, was you could only stay out for 3 days.
Oh, and you had to come back.
You had to come back because the shrimp was held on ice.
And then
sometimes if the fishing was good, you actually loaded up before the 3 days. So I was in. And there was a day or two, you know, getting the boat
unloaded and
cleaned up and all that, and then back out again. So, you know, you sort of saw each other every, you know, once or twice a week anyway. So.
No.
But the weather was so different then. When I arrived, I think the accumulated snow must have been at least a couple of feet deep, and it was cold and the wind was blowing.
Yeah.
Very different from today.
That's what I've heard, that the 70s were, the snow load was quite a bit different.
Yeah.
Huh. And I'm sorry, I've missed what month you came to the island.
After Thanksgiving.
After Thanksgiving.
Yeah, November.
Okay. All right.
And so, I had a car. It was a Volkswagen station wagon, you know, the station wagon style. And so I was leaving on the shrimp trip. And so I told Pat, I said, well, you know, here's the car. You can drive the car. And she got in the car and she says, oh, this is stick shift.
Oops.
So I said, well, maybe we could. So I drove to a parking lot and I said, well, to explain to her about the clutch and the gears and all that. And she sort of chugged around a little bit, you know, and I said...
That's kind, calling it
chugged. Chugged around.
I think we spent 20 minutes
well, you
of
know
me
how it is when you
almost getting it started and kill it. Almost get it started, kill it. Almost get it started, kill it.
And yep. So finally I said, well, I don't have much time. I got to get on the boat. Why don't you practice?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the car. Just go for it, honey.
Well, the car I even learned on was a Dodge. And back in the, late 50s, early 60s, they had a push button.
Yes, they did.
And so, you know, to go from a push button to something with gears.
For those of you that don't know, it was a push button gear shift.
Yeah.
So you went from drive to reverse to whatever with this little push button on the dash.
But it was automatic. Weird. You didn't have a clutch.
Yeah, it was automatic. Yeah. It was weird.
And my 120,000-mile Comet, Mercury Comet, was automatic transmission, too.
Yeah. So you must have
I
learned.
But now I drive stick shift all the time.
Oh, now she won't have anything other. Every time we get a new car, it has to be stick shift.
Really? So you don't like automatics at all?
Well, what I like about a stick shift is if you're going down a hill, it doesn't pick up speed when you have it in a gear. And I don't know, it just seems to me that automatics do. And for what our ice is like, what have you, I really like the stick shift.
Yeah, you get a lot of control with the stick shift because you can gear down. But, whatever, we digress. Okay, so so you learned how to drive in a parking lot, sort of, and managed to get around
it. I got better.
You got better. And you were working at Artinger's. You mentioned that you worked at the base for a while, too.
Yeah.
So that must have been right at transition from Naval Station to Coast Guard Base, right?
I worked about 6 months for the Navy in a clerk's position. And then the man who had been the civilian personnel officer under the Navy wanted to retire. Mm. And based on what my job had been in Washington, I qualified for the job here.
Oh.
So I was the civilian personnel officer for 3 years, I think, out there when there were 150 civilian employees working for the government. Yeah.
So so you were there actually during that transition from Navy to Coast Guard. That must have been kind of an interesting time
it
to make
was.
That.
But the Coast Guard people were wonderful.
Were they?
So easy to work with. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, it was quite a challenge, if I can interject what she had to face, because the benefits that the Navy had were different than what the Coast Guard expected they would have to provide.
Mm.
And there were some very generous benefits. My understanding was they would get a free trip outside every year to theoretically where they were hired from, but it could be any place.
Anywhere.
It could be Hawaii or California or Mexico or any place, you know. And they got a free car brought up, what, every couple
every
of years
couple
or,
years,
or something like
was.
That.
This is under the Navy.
Yeah, under the Navy.
Yeah.
So the people that had been hired by the Navy and then moved in with the Coast Guard sort of expected that everything would stay the same, you know. And so it was Pat's job to negotiate all this new stuff with the Coast Guard. And I guess some of it was successfully done and some not so, but anyway.
Interesting. And so did you maintain that 150 civilian employees out there throughout that whole transition? Or?
During the time I was there, yes. And then I left because the third year, or the second year, I guess, that I was there, the summer was beautiful.
and you were stuck.
I want to be outside. Nick was fishing. You know, why would I have to work? So after the third year, I quit so I could enjoy the summer. It was the wettest summer on record to that date.
So what did you do in your boredom?
Well, let's see. I think I worked for, the borough had a commissioner, a committee that was looking into oil development off Kodiak. I worked for them for a little while. I worked for Artinger's again, managing the store. And in there somewhere, I worked for Fish and Game for a short period of time. And then the early 80s, I started my own bookkeeping accounting business, mm-hmm. and KMXT was one of my first clients.
Yeah. So you were our accountant for, what did we figure out the other day?
Well, I think it was close to, well, if 83, so 17 plus 19, 36 years.
36
so,
years.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yes, it was a long time. I think some of the people who work here now weren't even born when I started working.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's at least two of them that were not born. Yeah. When
not
you started
that it
working
makes
here.
Me feel old.
Yep.
Oh, well, tell her about when you were the manager of Artinger's and he just started doing furniture. You know, Ben started out selling humazoos. You know what a humazoo is?
No.
It's a little thing you go...
Oh, like the kazoo kind of?
Yeah, kind of.
And then he stole guitar strings and then he branched out into musical instruments. And anyway, he really progressed. He was probably one of the best retailers that Kodiak's ever seen.
And marvelous taste in things.
But anyway, he got into furniture eventually. He didn't start out in furniture. It was a transition. He sold a lot of other things. But anyway, so he offered free delivery of the furniture. And so it was Pat's job to find people to move
the furniture.
And the store was downtown, only downtown at that point. So I'd go trolling through Tony's.
How'd that work
when
out
we
for
needed.
You?
Well, sometimes it did, and other times I'd get a call after the guys had been there with, hey, your fellows ran the leg of the table they were delivering into my door and made a hole.
So you'd have to get that fixed.
Yes. But sometimes they were very good and very willing workers.
Well, you know. Got to get back to that bar stool at Tony's.
Yeah, with a little more money.
Of course, to spend at the bar stool. It's Cause, important.
Because it was all cash sale, no taxes, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to say that on the air, though.
Oh, no, of course
that
not.
That it was a cash economy.
That's okay. It was a long time ago. I actually ran into Ben today for the first time. I haven't seen him in a long time. I see him every once in a while driving, you know, he's got those green trucks, and you never know if it's Ben behind the wheel until you see him driving. And then I ran into him today downtown for the first time in a long time. It was good to see him.
Yes. Good to see him. Hazel says he's working all the time.
Yeah, he said he's...
He never stops.
Keeps on going.
He's the model of the work ethic. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Oh, in fact, another little side story.
Mm-hmm.
I first met Ben in Jacksonville, Florida.
Really?
He was in the Navy. You know, he played in the Navy band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's how he got up here, and he played in the band here. You know,
he's
very proficient as a clarinetist and saxophonist and so forth. Anyway, so I had a newspaper route, you know, morning newspaper route, and he was one of my customers. He and Hazel had just gotten married, and there was and he was in the Navy. And just to show that, what he was like even back then, remember the A&P? Grocery stores?
Yep.
There was an A&P grocery store down the street. So when he wasn't doing whatever he had to do with the Navy, he worked at the A&P store.
Wow.
Anyway, I was one of his, or he was one of my...
Your newspaper route?
My newspaper route customers there.
That's funny. So did you guys reconnect when you got back up here? Did he?
Yeah,
did you recognize him away?
I didn't know he was here. I had no idea.
Man.
You know, but I don't think we talked much except when... Back then... It was a little different on paper routes because the newspaper sold you the papers and then you had to resell them to the customers.
Right.
And every week you had to go around and collect from the customer unless you could talk them into paying by the month. But every week, I think it was 45 cents a week you had to collect for a 7-day newspaper, if you can believe that.
Yep.
So anyway, so you got to know your customers a little bit because you had to get the money from them.
Sure.
So I got to know Ben and Hazel just through that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not really socially, but I just knew who they were and what they looked like. And I don't even know if I knew that they came from Alaska even, you know. But anyway, when I got up here, I just happened to go in the store, and we sort of said, oh, we sort of recognized each other, kind of, and I and, you know, and he said, where are you from? And I said, well, originally Jacksonville, Florida. He says, oh, I was stationed there in the Navy. And I said, oh, and then we sort of put it
figured
together.
It out. Yeah. So now, did Ben and Hazel come back up here in the 60s, or were they here on sort of your second round in the
Well, they
the
were 70s? Already here. They've been here since before the tidal wave, but yeah, the paper route days was back like 57 or something like that.
Oh, all right.
You know, so. He was
all
a
right.
kid.
Yeah, I was just a 12 or 13.
Okay.
You know,
I'm not putting the ages together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were there in the late 50s, I guess, and then came back here at some point.
Boy, Jacksonville must have been different in the late 50s, wasn't it? That whole section of Florida must have just been, was it small town stuff back then?
Well, it was always a fairly good-sized
was
city.
It?
Yeah, it was never a small town.
Yeah.
It was always a pretty good-sized city.
Yeah.
It's about a million people now, I guess, you know.
Jacksonville is?
Yeah.
Wow.
They've got a lot of business headquarters there.
I'll be darned.
Oh, and
yeah.
The Navy.
Yeah. Well, there's a three Navy, three Navy bases. There was
right there in Jacksonville.
Naval Air Station, and then there was a jet base called Cecil Field,
hmm.
and then Mayport, which is a beach town at the mouth of the St. John's River.
Okay.
That's a big aircraft carrier and Coast Guard base and stuff out there, you know.
Huh. Interesting stuff. Okay, so let's fast forward. When did you guys actually get married? Were you up here already, or were you...
No, we were here. July 29th, 1972.
Yeah.
1972. So, did you have an outdoor wedding? Did you have an indoor wedding? Did you have a wedding on a boat?
No, we got married in Ben and Hazel Ardinger's house.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. All right, well, that works. So, 1972. Mm-hmm. That was a while back.
Yeah.
And Judge Waller, or... Nancy Frost?
Yeah.
Her dad was Judge Waller.
Huh.
He was a magistrate here.
I had no idea. Okay.
And he married us. And one of his famous lines was he was reading the marriage whatever thing. And it was...
whatever thing.
Whatever.
That
know.
Thing.
And he talked about living in the Marshall State.
So if we don't always get along, it's not our fault.
I think he mispronounced
judge.
Marital. But
yeah. The Marshall State.
Yeah.
That's funny. So you guys have done quite a few things. And Nick, you didn't fish forever, did you? I mean, you did some other things. Or you fished, you tendered, right? Recently, more recently, you've been tendering?
Yeah, well, I started out just fishing, you mm-hmm. know. And then that evolved into tendering. And then in 83, we bought a boat. And then I've got a captain's license. And so I've skippered some of the seafood processing ships.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so I've done a little bit of everything, fishing, tendering, seafood processing.
I didn't realize you had done some of the seafood processing ships.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are getting some money raked in here. That's good.
Guilty people.
Guilty people. And we haven't even talked about trying to raise money. So we'll just do a quick thank you. Thank you to Cece, who's saying, I love hearing all these stories about people I know and finding out more about them and from people I don't know. And then Mary Patterson, thank you. She says, great story. Thanks, Nick and Pat.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Well, thank you for your donations.
Yes. So, what did your folks come up here for the wedding, Pat?
Yeah, they did.
They did?
And Nick's folks
Nick's
came
yeah,
too?
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And what did, you know, you left Denver, you said you were coming up here, and your mom gasped, you said. And
she gasped back in
Washington,
D.C.
when you thought you were coming back.
At the point that I was in Denver, I think she'd kind of given up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, it was more than a gasp. She said, well, because when Pat told her that she was going to go up and spend some time with this fisherman in Alaska that she met on a sailboat, she said, well, honey, if he mistreats you, you can always come back home.
Come back home. Nice,
she got over it after a while.
Well, that's good. Good to know you were on good terms at some point. Oh, that's funny. All right, so let's do another song, just because I need to take a bigger drink of water. Where are we? Should we do the one that you had at the very beginning, or what do you want to do?
Let's see. You played at the first, the steel drum
music,
and that was from Meeting in the West Indies. Try to Remember is from the Fantastics, the show we saw in Denver when I fell in love with a chuckle.
All right. Maybe we'll hear that chuckle again. Here, do we want to play that? Try to remember?
Up to you.
Sure, we're going to play that
for just a second.
It's a lovely song.
It has
been covered by a lot of people.
And I'm not even sure. This is the Tom Jones version.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow.
I think that was Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, sounded like him.
Mm-hmm. So, the famous chuckle got you all the way to Kodiak.
Yep.
You guys have done a lot of different things here, Nick. Much of it wrapped around the fisheries. Pat, you did a variety of things before you opened your own business. But at some point, were you one of these folks who just sort of, you stayed here and it just sort of, you just stayed here? Or did you guys as a couple make a conscious decision, you know what, we're just going to stay here. This is going to be our home. You know, sometimes you have opportunities to go elsewhere. What kept you here?
Well, I think my conscious decision was, Nick said, I like it here. So if I wanted to stay married to him,
that would be that.
We stayed here. Yeah. And at first, it took me a while to find my niche.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer I stayed, the more I got involved with things. And that was what was so wonderful about, is so wonderful about Kodiak. I'd always thought it would be kind of fun to do something theater.
Mm.
Well, Kodiak, then and now, you didn't have to have a long list of credentials to get involved. It was, if you were a willing participant, you were welcome. So over the years, I've been in a number of plays, even two musicals, and I'm not a great singer. And I've directed, and it's been a wonderful outlet. And it's thanks to the willingness of Kodiak people to welcome newcomers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's key. I mean, there's a lot of marriages that have failed because the guy wants to come to Kodiak to either fish or he likes mm-hmm. hunting or four-wheeling and all that. And women that are used to the malls and the big cities and mm-hmm. all of the other things feel sort of stranded, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the key, and that's my advice to newly arrived couples, is get involved, you know? I mean, there's people who say there's nothing to do in Kodiak, just aren't paying attention. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of volunteer opportunities. And even if you're not an outdoor person, there's still lots of things to do. And if you get involved, then you can endure the inclement weather and the dreary, rainy, wind-blown, rain, yeah. sideways rain days and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good advice. Good advice. And there is certainly plenty to do here that way. So, and we'll always do a plug for theater, right, Pat?
Oh, yes. In fact, that was part of my point, that right now there are lots of opportunities, too. So you can call Pam at KMXT, and she can hook you up with the theater group.
Yep, we can get you in there. So you're here. Pat, you just retired finally, completely.
Yeah. Yes,
retired.
As of last December 31st.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And Nick, you're not totally retired because you're still doing some things. You're doing some expediting and things like that, right? Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I'm the port agent for the cruise ships. Mm-hmm. And I work for Alaska Maritime Agencies up in Anchorage. And we have 30 cruise ships coming this year. We only had 19 last year. But I'm the one that, notifies the longshoremen when to come and tie up the boat and when to come and let it go. And then any things that the ship needs while they're here, usually I start getting emails 3 or 4 days before the ship's going
right.
to arrive. And if they have medical issues or they need dental appointments or medical appointments, I get those lined up. If they need provisions, I get those ordered and have them delivered, and anything like that the ship needs while they're here.
So. Pretty busy job for some of these big ships, I'd imagine. That keeps you hopping.
Well, it can be, because sometimes, like on the, we have what's called repositioning cruises,
right.
where they have been cruising in Asia, and they're coming over to cruise the summer in Alaska. And so they make a cruise out of the trip coming over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's oftentimes we're the first U.S. port, so they have to clear customs here. So they send, usually half a dozen CPB, Customs and Border mm-hmm. Protection agents down from Anchorage. And the Coast Guard has to do an inspection, regardless of what flag they fly. They have to pass a Coast Guard inspection before they can operate
in
U.S. waters. And so they fly 4 or 5 Coast Guard people down from Anchorage, and they do a thorough inspection, and they have to do their drills, their lifeboat drills mm-hmm. and fire drills and person overboard drills and all that kind of stuff. So it's dealing with them. So oftentimes they'll even send a second agent down from Anchorage to help me.
On those big days.
Because there's a lot of stuff to do. Coordinating with the federal agencies and plus what the usual stuff. And then they have a lot of crew changes, because mm-hmm. the ships cruise 12 months out of the year, but obviously people don't work on it 12 months out
right.
of the year. So there's a lot of rotation of crews, and so there's a lot of people
Does
coming.
That happen here a
oh,
lot
yeah.
of times?
Yeah, okay. a lot of time we get crew changes. So it's getting people back and forth to the airport. And, of course, if you've ever been on a cruise, they have live entertainment every night.
Right.
And so there's entertainers that come on for a week or two, and then they leave, and other entertainers coming on. So we're constantly getting entertainers back and forth, to the airport and that type of thing. So that's sort of what I'm doing now. So.
That's a lot of logistics.
Yeah.
Do you guys still have a boat, or have you sold the boat?
No, we don't have a commercial boat. We have a 34-foot sport boat.
A sport boat, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and hopefully you get out on that a few times.
Well, not as much as we'd like, but anyway, we're going to try harder this summer.
I'll change the subject.
Okay.
Since I'm on the air talking about the cruise ships, way for people to get involved,
mm-hmm.
the library offers free Wi-Fi to
right,
the people
right.
coming from the cruise. And there are a lot of people who come up, and we need volunteers to work from, to be there, not work, to be there from 10 till about 1, just to say, hi, the free Wi-Fi is that way. No, you don't need a password. Here's the coffee that I just made. So it's a great opportunity.
It's kind of a greeter job.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
And they're nice people that you meet. So anybody who is interested in that, just stop by the library.
I thought for a second you were going to say we need people to stand down here at the end of the road to help them, A, get across the street, and B, reassure them that, yes, you are on the right path.
Before they walk up that great big hill.
Yes, before they go all the way up the hill. So, but anyway. All right, so how do they contact the library, Pat, or who do they contact about volunteering for that?
Well, probably that would be the easiest way, and then the library can tell it's the Public Library Association that's actually coordinating it all. But talking to library staff is just fine.
Okay. All right. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Well,
and then there are other things that the cruise ships need, too, and that is more things to do here in Kodiak.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's people that do bus tours and harbor tours. And, of course, if the ship is here long enough, they have time to fly out and do bear viewing or half-day fishing trips. But most of the excursions that are booked on the ship are sold out by January.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a lot of things, there's a lot of people who don't have the opportunity to do an excursion. So if anybody's got the imagination or whatever and wants to do something during the summertime, you know, think about putting together some kind of a package, because the market's wide open for
things to do. And they're looking
for
things to do. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. So, all right, so you guys are here. It sounds like you're sticking to it for however long you decide to. And Nick, you've been here since 65, right?
Well,
off and on.
Alaska since 65,
okay.
Kodiak since 66.
66. Yeah. And Pat since
71. Late 71. Yeah.
So, how was, you know, when you got here, we talked about the earthquake and things had just sort of. They were still cleaning up and lots of mess from that. And by the time you got here, Pat, a lot of those buildings had probably been reconstructed downtown by then, right?
Yeah, I think the old Crafts Building was the only thing left standing. You couldn't go in it.
Right.
But it was still there. Main thing I remember about back then is there was a constant haze of dust over everything, because Nick, you'll have to help me. The road from the airport to Crafts was paved. And I think Center Avenue was paved.
Mm.
But as I recall, nothing past that going out to town.
Mill Bay Road was not paved at all, from town all the way out.
All the way out.
Safeway and stuff. And at the time, Rezanoff stopped at Benny Benson.
Oh,
There wasn't a Rezanoff that went on out. But Rezanoff was about the only paved road going out of town. Mission Road was a gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
Spruce Cape Road was a gravel road. Mill Bay Road was a gravel road. Salif didn't even exist. You know.
Yeah. Interesting. I think somebody who was here earlier, I don't remember who right now, was talking about the fact that Rezanoff was built out to increase the water reservoir so that they had access to the water reservoir at some point. That's one of the reasons they extended that, and that must have happened.
That was fairly recent,
was
actually.
Was that late 70s, early 80s sometime?
I think more recent than that, maybe. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, let's see. When was it?
Well, I got here in 89. It was out there by then.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think it was about...
It wasn't paved, but it was out there.
I think the late 70s was
when they extended the road. You know,
down.
It must have been, because the house I lived in on Three Sisters, mm-hmm. I think that was built in 70s, 7.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
because that opened up a lot
sort of access.
That,
yeah.
That opened up a lot of area.
Yeah.
Because Spruce Cape Road was there, but yep. Reznov wasn't there. There was, and then Mill Bay Road, of course, went on out to Mill Bay.
Right.
But Reznov ran down the middle.
And there's a lot of housing out.
And there's a lot of housing.
Room. Yeah.
The, you know, then the churches, you know, were built and everything else.
Yeah. Schools. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Et cetera. Huh. Interesting. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you guys about your time and your meeting and how you met and how you got to Kodiak. And are there other pieces of your story that you'd still like to tell?
Well, what do you think?
I don't think so. I can't think of anything in the book. Well, I think we've wasted enough time.
It's been fun. Usually people don't ask. You know?
Well, yeah. But it's been fun listening to you guys, and obviously we have audience members who have enjoyed hearing your story.
Well, I'm glad
as
at least two people are listening.
Yeah. Now you know how we feel half the time on the air. It's like, huh, I wonder if anybody's listening. Well, thank you again for coming in. Let's go out on a song, and then I'm going to transition to the rest of All Things Considered, I think. What would you like to hear as an exit?
Well, I guess of the two that are still on the list, the No Time at All comes from Pippin. And even though I am not a great singer, Veronica Costa-Bolton kindly cast me as Pippin's grandmother. So I think it's a cool song lyric-wise because it's enjoy life now, do things now, because in no time at all, you're going to be old. And then you're going to be old. So do it now.
And enjoy it.
It's a cool song.
All right. Thank you again, Pat and Nick Szabo.
Thank you,
Pat. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been fun. Here we go.
When you are as old as I, my dear, and I hope that you never are, you will woefully wonder why, my dear, through your cataracts and Qatar, you could squander away or sequester a drop of a precious year. For when your best days are yester, the rest are twice as dear. Good is a field on a fine summer night if you sit all alone with the weeds, or a succulent pear if with each juicy bite you spit out your teeth with the seeds. Before it's too late, stop trying to wait for fortune and fate you're secure of. For there's one thing to be sure of, mate, there's nothing to be sure of. Time to start living, time to take a little from this world we're given, time to take time, 'cause spring will turn to fall in just no time at all. I've never wondered if I was afraid when there was a challenge to take, and I never thought about how much I weighed when there was still one piece of cake. Maybe it's meant the hours I've spent feeling broken and bent and unwell, but there's still no cure so heaven sent as the chance to raise some hell. Everybody, oh, it's time to start living, time to take a little from the world. What could make you feel more obsolete than being noted for your morals? Give me a man who is handsome and strong, someone who's stalwart and steady. Give me a night that's romantic and long, then give me a month to get ready. Now I could waylay some aging roué and persuade him to play in some cranny. But it's hard to believe I'm being led astray by a man who calls me granny. One, two, three. I never have told, maybe you'll understand why. I believe if I refuse to grow old, I can stay young till I die. I've had troubles and tears by the score, but the only thing I'd trade them for is 67 more. All right, one more time, and this time let's hear it from everybody. One, two, three, four.
Oh, it's time to start living.
It's time to keep living, time to keep taking from the world you're given. You are my...